And we want to answer tonight is, what does holiness look like? And I especially want to apply that to us and to our country, to our nation. What does a holy nation look like? Back in Leviticus 19, our text will come from that particular chapter. And I want us to, when we look at this chapter, to try and focus on what holiness looks like, and again, what it would look like in our country. Leviticus 19 begins, the first two verses, like this. And the Lord spoke to Moses, saying, "Speak to all the congregation of the children of Israel, and say to them, You shall be holy, for I, the Lord your God, am holy." And notice that was given to the entire nation of Israel. The whole nation was to be holy as God was holy. He's called the Holy One of Israel. That emphasized His uniqueness as well as His separation from everything that was evil. From the very beginning, God has called His people to be holy. And why shouldn't He? Because we're made in His image. Going back to the very first book in the Bible, "Let us make man in our image." So we are made in God's image. And if He is holy, then we should be holy. And so we're to reflect the fact that we have the divine nature. In 1 Peter chapter 1, Peter brings this to our attention. Very first chapter, 1 Peter chapter 1, beginning in verse 15, he writes, "But as He who called you is holy, you also be holy in all your conduct." In all your conduct, in all your life, in all your behavior, be holy, for I am holy. So we're to show to the world, we're to reflect godliness. Since God is holy, then we're to reflect holiness. In our text, God gives instructions on how to remain pure, how to remain clean, and how to remain undefiled by sin. And why is this so important for us, and why is this so important for our nation? Let me quote Will Durant, one of the most famous historians in the modern era. "There is no significant example of a society successfully maintaining moral life without the aid of religion." He's saying there, you go back to the very beginning of time and you will not find any civilization, any nation, any group of people who led a moral life without religion. Our country desperately needs religion. And it desperately needs the religion of Jesus Christ. So, what does a holy moral life look like? Well, that's what he's getting ready to tell us in Leviticus 19. He introduced the fact to us and to them, be holy as I am holy, but now he says this is what it looks like. First of all, verse 3, regarding parents, any nation that's going to live a moral life, the parents have to be a central part of that. Verse 3, "Every one of you shall revere his mother and his father and keep my Sabbaths. I am the Lord your God." See, the home is the basic unit of all civilized life and civilized order. And of course, our country is and has been for at least a few decades attacking the home, trying to redefine the home, trying to downplay its significance and its relevance. But the home is the basing unit. And if the home isn't holy, the nation is not going to be holy. And a part of that is honoring parents. That's what he says here. Honoring parents is essential for the health of society, for the stability of society, for the future of society. This is seen in the Ten Commandments. Remember the Ten Commandments that God gave Moses on the mountain. In Exodus chapter 20, verse 12, one of the Ten Commandments has to do with this very thing. Exodus chapter 20, verse 12 says, "Honor your father and mother, that your days may be long upon the land which the Lord your God is giving you." That was one of the conditions or stipulations for God blessing them in the land, was if they honored, revered their mother and father. Certainly the idea being, if they stopped doing that, then God was going to stop blessing them. Well, what's going to happen to our nation when people stop revering mother and father? Not two mothers, not two fathers, but mother and father. So again, you take away the home and its stability from the nation, and the nation is in trouble. Of course, this is also emphasized in the New Testament. It's not just an Old Testament idea. In Ephesians chapter 6, we're told this beginning in verse 1. "Children, obey your parents in the Lord, for this is right. Honor your father and mother, which is the first commandment with promise, that it may be well with you and you may live long on the earth." Notice he says that's the first commandment with promise. What was the promise? That you may live well on the earth. Our nation will not live well and long if we stop revering mother and father. If we stop revering and honoring the home. We stop doing that, our country is in serious trouble. The neglect of parents is said to be an abomination in God's sight. In Proverbs chapter 30, verse 17, the wise man tells us this. He says, "The eye that mocks his father and scorns obedience to his mother, the ravens of the valley will pick it out and the young eagles will eat it." That's pretty graphic language. That's how serious God looks at the home. That's how serious God looks at children obeying their parents and respecting their parents. And again, when that is taken away, that nation or group of people is in trouble. Reverence for parents is tied to reverence for Jehovah. And why is that? Because we learn about authority and submission to our parents before we learn that to God. We learn about submitting to parents before we learn about submitting to God. So if children are never taught reverence and submission to parents, then it's going to be difficult for them to understand reverence and submission to God. And so we see our country in so many places in our country where there is no reverence for authority, there's no reverence for parents, there's no reverence for the home. No wonder there are so many problems in so many places in our country. The Bible said it's going to happen. It's going to happen. So the home is so important when it comes to holiness. Then in the next few verses, he talks about holiness regarding God. Beginning in verse 4 of Leviticus 19, says, "Do not turn to idols, nor make for yourselves molded gods. I am the Lord your God, and if you offer a sacrifice of a peace offering to the Lord, you shall offer it of your own free will. It shall be eaten the same day you offer it on the next day. And if any remains until the third day, it shall be burned in the fire. And if it's eaten at all on the third day, it's an abomination, it shall not be accepted. Therefore, everyone who eats it shall bear his iniquity. Because he has profaned the hallowed offering of the Lord, and that person shall be cut off from his people." It's interesting, the word idols here that's used in the Hebrew basically mean nothings. Nothings. Things that are worthless. Things that have no value. In 1 Chronicles chapter 16... we have this left for us beginning in verse 26. 1 Chronicles 16 and verse 26. It says, "For all the gods of the peoples are idols, but the Lord made the heavens. Honor and majesty are before him. Strength and gladness are in his place." All the gods of the peoples are idols. All the gods of the peoples are nothings. That's what they are. They are not real. That's why he calls them nothings. They're pretenders. They're imposters. There's only one God. There's only one Jehovah. He's the one that made the world. He's the one that sustains the world. He's the one that gave us an eternal spirit. In Psalms 97, the psalmist tells us this in verse 7. Psalms 97, 7. The psalmist says, "Let all be put to shame who serve carved images, who boast of idols. Worship him, all you gods." Let all be put to shame who worship idols. Our country is filled with people who worship idols. They worship, you can just almost pick any subject or topic and somebody worships it in some way in our country. The number of people who actually worship Jehovah has greatly declined. Again, is it any surprise then that we have the trouble that we do? Turning over to one of the minor prophets, Habakkuk. Habakkuk chapter 2. He also refers to... idolatry. These pages are so thin, they're not coming apart. There it is. Habakkuk chapter 2, verses 18 and 19. Habakkuk writes, "What profit is the image that its maker should carve it? The molded image, a teacher of lies, that the maker of its mold should trust in it, to make mute idols. Woe to him who says to wood, awake, to silent stone, arise, it shall teach. Behold, it is overlaid with gold and silver, yet in it there is no breath at all." It says, what profit is it for you to carve a piece of wood or carve a piece of stone and then tell it, well, arise, teach me something? He says, look at how ridiculous that is. But yet, people in our country do the same thing. They make all kinds of idols, worship all kinds of ideas and principles and philosophies, and they expect those things to teach them, to help them in some way. But none of them are real. Something that's not real can't help you, can't teach you. But yet people constantly are going off in our country chasing this, that, and the other, when the real answer is right here in the Bible and always has been. And that hasn't changed. He gives information about making a peace offering. Peace offerings during the times of the law of Moses signified the joys that people had, the peace that people had from knowing that them and God were at peace with one another. But it was to be offered by one's own free will. It wasn't something that was forced upon you when you felt that need to worship through that way, then that's what you were to do. Well, the Bible says that Jesus is the one who has made peace with God possible. No one else has been able to bring God and man together except Jesus. Buddha wasn't able to do that. Confucius not able to do that. Muhammad not able to do that. A job certainly isn't able to do that. Money isn't able to do that. Nothing is able to bring man and God together except Jesus. Paul stressed this in Ephesians chapter 2. This is what he told the church in Ephesus, beginning in verse 13. Ephesians chapter 2, beginning in verse 13. He says, "But now in Christ Jesus, you who once were far off have been brought near by the blood of Christ. For he himself is our peace, who's made both one and has broken down the middle wall of separation, having abolished in his flesh the enmity, that is, the law of commandments, contained in ordinances, so as to create in himself one new man from the two, thus making peace. And that he might reconcile them both to God in one body through the cross, thereby putting to death the enmity. And he came and preached peace to you who were far off and to those who were near. For through him we both have access by one Spirit to the Father. Through him we have access to the Father. You can't have access to God, to Jehovah, any other way. That's what he is wanting them to understand. There is no other way. There's no philosophy, there's no person, there's no anything that can give you access to the Father except Christ. Our country greatly needs to return to respecting God, to respecting His Word. If it doesn't, I don't see any future for our country. Just to continue to go downhill. But we have the chance to return if we respect God and respect His Word. Then the last part of the instruction in Leviticus 19 has to do with neighbors. So we've talked about the family, we've talked about God, now we're talking about everyone else, basically. Everyone else. Beginning in verse 9, Leviticus 19, verses 9 and 10. When you reap the harvest of your land, you shall not wholly reap the corners of your field, nor shall you gather the gleanings of your harvest. And you shall not glean your vineyard, nor shall you gather every grape of your vineyard. You shall leave them for the poor and the stranger. I am the Lord your God. So part of a holy life, then, is providing for the poor, providing for those who are less fortunate. When you look at the Bible from Genesis to Revelation, God has always had a very special place for the poor. And so He gives instructions here. Remember, He's giving this for the entire nation. And this instruction here is very relevant for our country. This is how our country needs to take care of it. Very simple. What does He tell them to do? Well, the people that own the land and that are raising the various crops, regardless of what it might be, are to not completely harvest the fields. You know, not be so careful as to, pick every grape or every fig or whatever. Leave the corners, all right? Why? So the poor, the needy, and so forth could come and harvest the remains for themselves. He gives them a little more instruction in Deuteronomy about this, in Deuteronomy chapter 24. We see the wisdom of Jehovah here. Deuteronomy 24, beginning in verse 19, he says, "When you reap your harvest in your field and forget a sheaf in the field, you shall not go back to get it. It shall be for the stranger, the fatherless, and the widow, that the Lord your God may bless you in all the work of your hands. When you beat your olive trees, you shall not go over the boughs again. It shall be for the stranger, the fatherless, and the widow. When you gather the grapes of your vineyard, you shall not glean it afterward. It shall be for the stranger, the fatherless, and the widow." Anytime you're harvesting, if you drop some or if you leave some behind or whatever, it is for those who are less fortunate, like the widows, or like the orphans, or like the poor. That's what they're for. And what a wonderful way of helping the less fortunate, because it helped them provide for themselves. And in other words, it wasn't just Jehovah giving them something. They felt a sense of self-worth. Because they could go into the fields, or they could go into the vineyards, or wherever, and they could harvest it themselves. So it helped their dignity, I guess is the word. It's a great lesson for our country. They were able to take care of themselves, so it gave them self-esteem and dignity. They were still taken care of, but they could feel better about it. Well, the next three verses, he talks about holiness being connected to honesty. Verse 11 through 13. "You shall not steal, nor deal falsely, nor lie to one another. And you shall not swear by my name falsely, nor shall you profane the name of your God. I am the Lord. You shall not cheat your neighbor, nor rob him. The wages of him who is hired shall not remain with you all night until morning. So he says, holiness, a holy nation, is an honest nation. A nation that doesn't steal from each other, that doesn't deal falsely, that doesn't lie, that doesn't swear falsely. So no stealing, no lying, no deceiving. If we go back a few pages to Leviticus 6, I want us to read the first five verses of that chapter. Leviticus 6, beginning in verse 1. And the Lord spoke to Moses, saying, if a person sins and commits a trespass against the Lord by lying to his neighbor about what was delivered to him for safekeeping, or about a pledge, or about a robbery, or if he is extorted from his neighbor, or if he has found what was lost and lies concerning it and swears falsely, and any one of these things that a man may do in which he sins, and it shall be, because he has sinned and is guilty, that he shall restore what he has stolen, or the thing which he has extorted, or what was delivered to him for safekeeping, or the lost thing which he found, or all that about which he has sworn falsely. He shall restore its full value and add one-fifth more to it, and give it to whomever it belongs on the day of his trespass offering. So imagine what our country would look like if people followed that instruction. So holiness, a holy nation, is a nation that's honest, straightforward, doesn't extort, doesn't oppress, doesn't deceive, is honest. And then finally, he talks about being just and compassionate. Beginning in verse 14. You shall not curse the deaf, nor put a stumbling block before the blind, but shall fear your God, I am the Lord. You shall do no injustice in judgment. You shall not be partial to the poor, nor honor the person of the mighty. In righteousness you shall judge your neighbor. You shall not go about as a talebearer among your people, nor shall you take a stand against the life of your neighbor. I am the Lord. You shall not hate your brother in your heart. You shall surely rebuke your neighbor and not bear sin because of him. You shall not take vengeance, nor bear any grudge against the children of your people, but you shall love your neighbor as yourself. I am the Lord. A holy nation does not mistreat those who are less fortunate, like he mentions the deaf or the blind. A holy nation is concerned about the deaf and the blind and does what they can for them. They certainly don't curse the deaf, nor do they put a stumbling block before the blind. That's not compassion. A good measure of a nation is how it treats the weak, the poor, the less fortunate. How are those people treated by the nation? In Nehemiah chapter 5, gives us some wisdom. Nehemiah chapter 5, verse 15, says this. Nehemiah chapter 5, verse 15. Yeah, there it is. But the former governors who were before me laid burdens on the people and took from them bread and wine besides 40 shekels of silver. Yes, even their servants bore rule over the people, but I did not do so because of the fear of God. This is Nehemiah talking about how he lived. He said, the people before me would take from the poor, would take from the less fortunate, laid burdens on the people, took from them. But he says, I did not do so. God tells Moses back in our text, everybody is to be treated justly. Everybody's to be treated justly. You shall not be partial to the poor. Nor should you honor the rich. Everybody is supposed to have the same system of justice. That's what he's telling them. In righteousness you shall judge your neighbor. In other words, you're to judge rightly. You're to do the right thing, the honest thing, the just thing. That's what it's supposed to be like. So everybody is to be treated justly. Back a few pages in your Bible to Exodus chapter 23. Beginning in verse 2, he writes, "You shall not circulate a false report. Do not put your hand with the wicked to be an unrighteous witness. You shall not follow a crowd to do evil, nor shall you testify in a dispute so as to turn aside after many to pervert justice. You shall not show partiality to a poor man in his dispute." Again, it's about being honest and just. Skip down to verse 6. "You shall not pervert the judgment of your poor in his dispute. Keep yourself far from a false matter. Do not kill the innocent and righteous, for I will not justify the wicked." Keep yourself far from a false matter. A holy nation is going to be extremely concerned about doing what's right, being just, doing what's proper. We're not to go about as talebearers. We're not to slander. We're not to gossip. Instead, we're to do what? Love your neighbor as yourself. Love your neighbor as yourself. So he goes on in the rest of the chapter and gives more instructions. But this paints a picture of what it means for a nation to be holy. God has called us to be holy as He is holy. We're made in His image. He expects us, especially as Christians, to be holy. He said this is what holiness looks like. So we're to be an example to the world to show the world what holiness is, what holiness looks like, what a holy life is like. And then our nation hopefully learns from us. Do we need to make changes in our lives? Are we not living a holy life? Are we not setting an example for the world? We can't expect our country to be more holy than we are. I guess that's a lesson to take from this. If we want our country to change and be better, then we need to change and be better as an example. We have an invitation song for us tonight. There might be a need in your heart for you to respond, to ask for prayers, to ask for forgiveness. And if there is, then we certainly encourage you to come as we stand and sing. Let's stand, please.